have, and Parshas Noach, with Yaakov Kamenetsky. Okay, everybody knows that Noach spent 120 years building his teva and was completely unsuccessful in making anybody do tshuva. Every single person kept saying back and forth, 120 years, and yet he didn't do anything. The Bereb HaSadeh said he spent 300 years. We had to consider that for a second. 300 years giving Musar from the Zohar, and it did absolutely nothing. Way to go, spell check, by the way. Spell check turned Musar into mustard. But either way, he gave Musar from the from the Zohar, says, and he did absolutely nothing for anyone. 300 years you're giving Musar, and you did absolutely nothing. So what was the issue? How could you not have one Talmud, not one student that would be able to listen to you after 300 years of work? Why wouldn't that be?
But if you're running the clock for so many years, it'd be kind of like, okay, I can go a little bit off.
So it must not be, obviously. You're not going around. He's not like one of those crazy people. So what's he saying? He's trying to tell them, be better people. He's trying to tell them, do the right thing. That's all he's trying to say. So you got it. How could no one have listened to him? How could that not be one person? So why was Noah so unsuccessful? Some say that the easy lesson comes from the word Noah. He was too soft on people. He was never harsh. He was always that nice guy. And nice guys sometimes work, sometimes he doesn't do anything. And by Noah, all the things that he tried to convince people that this is the wrong thing to do, you're doing something wrong, none of them would listen because he was so nice. He was so easygoing on them, and that was that. But the Medrash seems to say something different. The Medrash in Perek Lamed Aleph, Halacha Gimel, says he gave them Musar for worshipping of Avodah Zarah. And he asked them, how can you serve wood if you created the wood? Now, obviously, it's just like Avraham Avinu, right? How could you serve that wood that you created, that you did on your own? And I'll sure to realize, the people who were around before the Mabul were not a bunch of fools. They weren't idiots. Nobody thought that the wood was chashuv. They only did Avodah Zarah because they wanted a matzah of arayas. None of them believed in the stuff that they were making with their own hands. None of them actually thought that what they were doing was chashuv, that they were actually worshipping this idol. None of that made any sense to anyone. But they did it because it was an easy way to get girls. That was what they were trying to do. If they were trying to matzah of arayas and not even girls, but for them, it was even guys and even animals, it was a terrible, terrible world where anything was mutter and people were doing whatever they wanted. In that world, the only way to do that is through some form of Avodah Zarah where people forget about God for a little bit or allow certain things to happen because it's for God's sake in the name of this Avodah Zarah. That's what they're doing it for. This concept was brought up by Bnei Yisrael in the desert as well, where Shittim itself, the only reason why they started worshipping Avodah Zarah, where those women inside the tent started telling them, worship at this Avodah Zarah and then we'll be able to be together. That they only worshipped the Avodah Zarah, they said it's alpha or, they thought it was just a nothing little Avodah Zarah. They only allowed themselves to do it because they thought it was the only way that they could matzah up arayas, to get them, to allow them to do arayas in a way, or to get certain people to do the arayas with them. Yes, I'm holding this there. You're 100% right. Says Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, the same thing applied by the other nations as well. The reason why they started it up as well before the Mabul, I don't know if this applies after the Mabul, but before the Mabul was the exact same reason. Exact same reason as today. So therefore, his Musar didn't affect him at all, and here's the reason why. He's going around telling them, guys, Avodah Zarah isn't worth it. Avodah Zarah is nothing. Avodah Zarah doesn't mean anything. And they knew that. That wasn't an argument to them. Everybody understood that Avodah Zarah was nothing. He is so behind trying to understand, behind Avodah Hashem is trying to find the Siva, the reason for something. What is the reason why they're worshipping these idols? And for that, Noah could not come up with a good reason. Why are they doing this? Instead, he just kept saying, don't do Avodah Zarah, don't do Avodah Zarah. And the people are like, we're not doing Avodah Zarah. We're doing Gili Arayas, and the Avodah Zarah is just there to get to the Arayas.
Why do you think that?
You're right,
you know that Avodah Zarah is not real.
Like, I might have been able to fool people into thinking that it wasn't. It could be that even in and of itself, you get yourself thinking the other way, but now you're already asking on the Gemara itself, why did Bnei Yisrael need Avodah Zarah in order to matzah arayas? But it's more than just that story. It's about history that this is true. The answer is that the guilt complex goes away. You have a guilt complex of believing in God, so you just forget about God for a little bit. You bring about that Avodah Zarah. I hear you, but I guess the way Chazal are looking at it is, no, that if you're only doing the Avodah Zarah in order to matzah up the Gilui Arayas, you don't think Avodah Zarah is a problem at all. You don't think you're doing anything at all. You don't believe in it. You don't really think anything of it. You're just doing it in order to get to something else. But it's a way of making yourself forget for a little bit to get to something. That would be the idea. I'm sorry?
Like,
that could very well be. That you're a the argument to him, that at least you have something. But the point is that he was arguing the wrong point. If the issue is taiva, and it always was an issue of taiva, of desire, or something like that, and they're arguing something else entirely, that's not, it completely went beyond them, went way over their heads, they didn't get anything from it. Says the Kedushas Leger of Levi Yitzchak Radishin. Sometimes a tzaddik has a desire for something physical, for something gashmi inside this world. For example, even a tzaddik can have a feeling that I want to have something with money. You're calling yourself a tzaddik, you want someone that's not. No, fine. But sometimes you have this desire for money, or you have this desire for food. You really want, and he can't understand where it comes from. His whole avodah, his whole life, is about serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the best way possible. So how could he ever have this taiva for money, or this taiva for food? How could these thoughts have entered his system? Where did that come from? Where did all these thoughts come from? And he keeps thinking to himself, how could this be? How could this be? And the truth is that it comes from his interaction with Rishayim. And it's a very, very scary concept. An unbelievable concept, but a scary concept. When you work with a Russian, when you work and you try to get them to do tshuva, and you work with them and you're together with them and you're around, you may be able to lift up the evil people, but don't think that you don't bring yourself down at the same time. At the exact same time that you're lifting them up, he is bringing you down. And it's automatic. It's automatic that being around him allows you, your connection with that Russia, allows him to feel that kedusha that you have, and allows him to feel the way you feel the same way regarding his tumor. That tumor rubs off on you, and you become a little bit desensitized. You become a little bit different. And it's like a person who works in a garbage dump. If you work in a garbage dump, no matter how hard you try to stay clean, you're still going to smell like garbage. You might not have any garbage on you, you'll keep brushing off the garbage, and there'll be nothing clinging to you, but you're going to smell like garbage. And when you go home, somebody's going to say to you, what were you doing in a garbage dump? That's the way it is, being around these people. When Noah went and started to give Musaf, for 120 years, he went to wherever these people were, to all their places, whatever it was, and he went around. It affected him a bit. It allowed him to be brought down a tiny little bit, to the point where he had some type of taiva, something a little bit missing in his system, which is why Rashi says, an unbelievable Rashi, Perek Zayin, Pasuk Zayin, it says, Noach and his sons, they all went into the Teva named Mea Mabul, because of the waters of the Mabul. Says Rashi, what do you mean? They went into the Teva, period. Why do you have to say because of the waters of the Mabul? Says Rashi, Noach Miktani Emunah Haya. Noach had small amounts of Emunah. Mamin Ve'eno Mamin Shavu Mabul. He believed and yet he didn't believe that the Mabul would come. He wouldn't go into the Teva until the water pushed him in. What are you saying? HaKadosh Baruch Hu just spoke to him 7 days earlier after the Shalach died and told Noach, this is it. You got 7 more days. He spoke to him 120 years earlier. Who knows if he got any Nebuahs in between? We don't know. We only have 2 Nebuahs that we know about. 120 years earlier and 7 days earlier. All of a sudden he's Mikhani Amuna. He has little amounts of Amuna and he doesn't want to go inside the Teva. What does that mean? How could a person possibly have a small amount of Amuna when he's such a big tzaddik? And the answer is, when you hang around these people, it's going to affect you. So when he hung around these people, so even though he knew, he absolutely knew, and of course he believes in a Kadosh Baruch Hu, it takes you down a notch. That's not the same level of Amunah that he was on before. Thus it became Mikatani Amunah. That's why, in the beginning of the Parsha, when it says Noach was a tzaddik, you have Rashi, some darshanit lit for good, that if he would have been in any other generation, he would have been the biggest tzaddik in the world. He would have been even the bigger tzaddik. And some say it was Lignai, that if he was by Avraham Avinu's door, then he would have been even worse. And the concept is that Noach had tzaddik, even though he was a tzaddik, and the Pasuk calls him a tzaddik, the Pasuk calls him a tamim. He was tamim ayyub derosav. How many people in the world does it say that you're perfect in your generation? In fact, how many people does the Torah ever praise and say that they were tremendous? That he, 3-4 people altogether? These people have this concept of being called a tzaddik, being somebody who is absolutely special. And the reason why he's taken down is because there's something that goes on when you're hanging out around the Rishayim. Even if you're being told to, even if you're trying to help them, it doesn't matter. It's an automatic effect on your system. It's going to happen and lower you a little bit. And that's the lesson that's being learned from over here. Okay, so later on. Which one? What do you mean?
Like afterwards, you're off with the vineyard?
Oh, with the vineyard itself. I don't know. That in and of itself, I gave a share on that last year from the Wolfson. It's an unbelievable idea that somehow through the Ori, being together with its mate on the table caused Noah to have something of a pagam in his system. He wanted to prove that there is no satan anymore, no malach hamavet, no yetzahara after the teva. He wanted to prove it. Thus he planted a vineyard, got himself drunk, and said, see, nothing's going to go wrong. And we all know what happened. That something did go badly wrong. Noah was either castrated or sodomized. And it was based on the fact that the world had been ruined by the fact like certain animals being together on the teva and Ham being together with his wife on the teva. And I have a really, really unbelievable little pasuk over here. When they left the teva, when they all came out from the teva, HaKadosh Baruch Hu first said to Noah, I want you to go off the teva. It says, where is it? By Baruch Hu came to Noah. No, that's a little bit later. We are right over here with God. Okay, same in that teva, you should go. Look what it says. It says, Kol Achaya and everything else. And then it says, Kol Achaya, Kol Remes, Kol Oof, Kol Remes, Ala Arit. All wild animals, all bugs, all birds, anything that crawls on the ground. Oh, Israel. I felt Israel walk in the room. Lemishpachos Seihem, by their families, Yasu Min HaTeva. They left from the table. What does it mean by their families? What families? There was a male and a female. What does that mean? They walked arm in arm down the table, the husband and the wife. They didn't have any children. I mean, the Gan Rava does say that there were animals on the teva that could not survive more than a year. You guys can probably think of them. Gnats, fleas, flies. So they made life. They didn't live the whole year, says the Gan Rava. So they didn't live the whole year. How could they leave the teva? How could two fleas have left the teva? The answer is, those fleas had babies. And those babies left the teva. So their families left the teva. They didn't leave the teva. Their families left the teva instead. There you go. But that's the kasha they asked in the Gan Rava immediately. They said, well, what do you mean? They can't mate on the teva. They can't mate on the teva. Then they couldn't have had babies. So it must be some miracle happened. The miracle happened that those animals, seems from the Ramban that he says this way, that those animals who normally wouldn't have survived the year, they survived the year. They were able to survive and they were able to have babies after they left the teva. So what is that? Okay, so how could it be? Ibn Ezra also, by the way, it's not just the Gan Rava. The Gan Rava really could quote that. Ibn Ezra. Ibn Ezra is still a problem. So what does that mean? And the Chazal says straight out, that having cooked custom of these, and none of the animals were together on the table. So if Yaakov Kamenetsky says an unbelievable answer, Yaakov Kamenetsky says maybe it's that, even though there are many, many animals of the same min, of the same type, there are of that min, there are many mishpachos. For example, there is a category of animals called wild cats. In that wild cat category, there are mishpachos, there are families. And the families are, there are lions, there are tigers, there are leopards, there are jaguars, there are cheetahs, there are panthers, whatever it is, right? We have all the little cats and everything. But they're really under the category of two cats. So there were two minim, right? But there were many mishpachos on the table. They had a family of different types of minim that went together. I guess you can call them in the species of tigers, the species of lions, the species of leopards, and there was a male and female of each, but they were of the same family, and they left lemishpachos seihem. All the lions and the tigers and the cheetahs and everything, they all left together off the table. They all left together off the table, and that's the idea behind it, that they all went together. Maybe Noah brought two of each inside the table itself, and that's the idea that they left with their family. So that's a good answer. That's a good answer, but it goes against the famous Rosh Hashanah. The Ran, that's what Yaakov Kamenetsky obviously was in this century. The Ran was a very late Rishon, talking late 1300s. Late 1300s. The Ran, we all know from the back of the Gemara itself. The Ran asked the famous question. He says, how could it be that all the animals fit inside the table? I want you to think for one second. Just put two lions, two tigers, two... I have 50 bears, but that's just too off. Two leopards, two cheetahs, all of those types of wildcats. Then add in all the different types. Two African elephants, two Indian elephants, two dromedary camels, two Bactrian camels. And let's go into all the different types of rabbits, all the different species of rabbits. And if we put all that on the table, says the Ran, the table was never even close to being big enough to fit all these animals. I mean, we're talking 300 amos long. It's about 450 feet. You can't fit all these animals in one table. It's going to have this impossible. There's no way you're going to be able to fit them on. So that question is not just the question of the Ran. The question is asked by the Ramban. The Ramban answers the question by saying, it was a miracle. As long as you got on the table, then you lasted. So these animals got on the table, the elephants walked in, and then all of a sudden they expanded. The way that everybody understands it now is because you have to reference everything that sounds magical. Harry Potter is that the stuff that they have, like you can make a bag, and then the bag immediately expands on the inside. It's a huge bag. And that's the concept. All the animals went in the teva, and then the teva miraculously expanded on the inside so that it became much, much bigger than it was, and you were able to fit every Jew of every species, of every animal that went on the teva. You were able to fit every single one, you were able to get it inside. Okay. And that's an awesome answer. That's a great answer from the Ramban. The Ibn Ezra is crazy. Ibn Ezra said, Machadish, there was more than one teva. There were a bunch of tevas. It was a Nina, a Pinta, Santa Maria, all together. They were like the Iker boats where Noah was, and there were other boats on the side. I have no idea how they fed the animals in the boats on the side. I don't know how they would have fed them. Maybe they split up. Noah and his wife got one table. Shem and his wife got another table. Ham and his wife got another table. Yepes and his wife got another table. I have absolutely no idea, but that does limit you right now to five tables. I don't know. I have absolutely no idea. Maybe they had little, I don't know, drawstring bridges. I have absolutely no idea. But even as it says, there were many tevas. They were all going in the same area. Right? They all stayed in the same area. Kadosh Baruch Hu allowed that to happen, and that's that. But the Ran has a tremendous answer. Tremendous answer. Some of you might have heard this before, but the answer is worth bearing repeating once you hear the Rabbi Yaakov that says, only two of every family made it to the city. There were two elephants, two cats, two camels. And after the teva, after everything was over, the animals came off the teva, and then HaKadosh Baruch Hu let them have babies, and those babies were sent to certain areas. And those animals that went to those areas adapted to the areas that they were around, and they became the animals that we see today. Two cats went on the teva. As they came off, some of those baby cats became lions. Some of them became leopards and started to climb up trees. Other ones decided to go to the forest areas of Asia and became tigers. Others went to South America, went to the Brazilian rainforest and became jaguars. Others decided that they needed speed, so they became cheetahs. I would go with that one. Others decided they were going to become mountain lions and would hide inside mountainous regions in North America. And you went to every single one. And the bears, there were all these different types of bears. The polar bears went up north. The grizzly bears went to the forest up in the upper Canada. There were black bears that went that wanted to climb trees in the middle of America. There were, go on, you went to giant pandas, and then you went to Syrian brown bear, whatever it was, spectacled sun, come on, I can get all of them. Anybody got any other stuff? Like the Asiatic black bears, forgetting one. The grizzly is part of brown bears. Brown, grizzly, Kodiak, there's two different types, there's European and American brown bears. I'm not going to go into that right now, but I have those. No, koalas don't count. Jeez, marsupials, come on. Doc, at the end? Where did, whoa, what do you mean? When they went on? Solid question. That's a solid question of itself. All we know on this, listen, I don't know how America was involved with the Mabul itself. I wish I knew, and I wish we really had the answers. Let's go into this, just stop, okay? Just parenthetically, let's go into this. As it goes right now, the way we understand it from Chazal, Chazal say the Mabul went over the entire land 15 hours, that the entire land was covered. It seems like, let's include everything, including America and all that, that every part of the world was covered up by 15 hours. That means that you're going to run into major issues with where did the animals go? You can answer that with two different answers. Either number one, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted the world to be settled, so he brought the animals immediately after the teva, brought different babies in different areas and allowed them to grow up in that area immediately, put it according to their whatever it is. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu was involved, you don't need the question of crossing the ocean. It's pluck, plank. That's all it is. It's a solid question, but that's already the Gemara's question. The Gemara answers that the table was only there for them to do tshuva, for them to see that there's something to do tshuva on. But that's a solid question of itself. We got that's one way. Another way is that you have by Migdal Bubble. When Migdal Bubble happened and they all got scattered, all the people got scattered, and the animals got scattered with it. You have that. A third answer that I haven't seen it in Rishonim would be an answer of that the Mabul was somewhat limited. Even though the Gemara seems to say that it went over the entire world, maybe it was limited in its effect, and certain animals were able to survive. Maybe the people didn't survive. Certain animals might have survived. It doesn't seem that way from the Psukim. It seems from Chazal that they don't say that at all. But there are, we've shown him that you could be Medayik from that maybe the Mabul didn't land everywhere. That's not the way that I usually learn things. I usually go with the Ramban. Okay, that's another way of looking at it, and that way you'd answer your question immediately. The animals would have survived over there. Or number four. The number four answer in which we really don't, you know, we don't, the answer is we don't know. I mean, that's really it. It doesn't matter because the Torah never tells us how the animals got to the areas where they are. It doesn't matter if they went over the Bering Strait or if somehow there was Pangaea and then later on the world, you know, split. split itself up, or whatever it is. It doesn't matter, because the Torah never told us this. But you want a darshan, I don't know if there's any way to darshan it out from the Torah itself. If there's any way to get it, or at least we do, we've lost the power to be able to do so. But either way, says the Ron, somehow those animals found it in different places. And they each became what they are today. Each one became in that type of idea. There is support to this theory from the Radal in the Pirkei Rebbe Eliezer. I found this Radal, I was amazed by it. His proof is, look at how many different people there are. And look at how different people look from one another. And yet we all come from Noah. Or even if you don't want to kind of, we all come from Noah. Maybe a guy survived or whatever, I don't know. Against the words of Chazal and the Gemara. We all come from others. If we all come from others, or we all come from Noah, how in the world do we have so much differentiation between us and Asians and Africans, I should say, and Europeans and everything? I mean, don't try to... there's books that people have. How could it be that we're so different if we all come from the same person? Well, the answer is, says Pirkei Rebbe Eliezer, that there's such a thing as adaptation. People adapt to their surroundings. That's what the Radal says, and he said this years and years and years ago. We're talking 250 years ago. He says the Radal, we're talking 250 years ago, there's such a thing as moving around and things like that. And there's even a proof from a Gemara. And I gave a shir in this Gemara before. It's Gemara in Shabbos, Lamed Ben Aleph, that mentions that they asked Hillel Azokim. This man wanted to get Hillel angry. So he went around and said, Mikan Hillel, Mikan Hillel. Who's Hillel? Who's Hillel? Hillel comes out. He was shampooing his hair in Erev Shabbos. That's a suggestion, by the way. Take a bath. That you should always take a bath before Shabbos. Hear this? Okay. Watch out. I don't want to... Yeah, sure, buddy. It's fine. You can just... It's fine. But that... Either way, you should go... You should go ahead and think about, says Hillel, he says, what do you need, my son? Ask me anything you want. And he says to him, I always wanted to know, why are the Babylonians' heads round? Why are the Talmudians' eyes? Why are they strange? Seems to be circular. No, I don't think so. I think it's more circular. Because it says Trutos, which seems to be more circular. But it could be, it's referring to eyes that are Asian as well. And then he says, what about, why are the Africans' feet, why are their feet larger, wider on the bottom? And Hillel answered them, the Africans live on certain types of marshy land, and in order for them not to sink, they needed to have these larger feet. These people live in areas where the desert sands were blowing, and therefore in order to make sure that their eyes were unaffected by the sand, they needed to adapt these certain types of eyes. These people, when they were born in a strange way, and therefore their heads were made in a circular way. They were born in that way. Meaning, we're dealing with this concept of adapting to your surroundings. That's the idea. Now, Rabbi Yaakov is clearly not saying, Rabbi Yaakov is saying that every animal made it onto the table. Every single animal that we have today, and maybe others that maybe have gone extinct since then, like the dodo bird or whatever, right? Oh, the quagga, which is one of my favorite creatures in the world. These types of animals, they existed, they were on the table, there were two of them, and then when they got off the table, they went to wherever they were supposed to go to. However, in another way, says the Radal, and based on the Drasha Saran, which is the Rishon, then... Of course, they all have to come from something, and eventually they changed according to what they were, according to what they needed to be able to survive at the time. Listen, we see it from Jews. Look at us. Look at us. We were all Mediterranean at one point. Every single one of us. I'm whiter than white. How in the world did that come? We have blonde-haired kids, we have red-haired kids. You could say that there were Gerim among Klal Yisrael, and that's one way of adding on all these other genes that we didn't have beforehand. You could say something like that, but that doesn't explain how there seems to be a genetic deficiency. Not actually deficiency. Some type of genetic code that's within us that allows us to be able to have these kids that we never should have otherwise. We are purely Mediterranean. No matter how many people, it's strange when you see two... Okay, we don't have to talk about this for right now, but regardless, that's the concept of all these... Yeah, that's right, I didn't want to go into it. We don't have to go into this. We can understand the concept. If that concept is true, said the Radal, in human beings, culture can apply to animals, that the animals can adapt to the surroundings around them and be allowed to be able to do something a little bit different. You'll notice that this is purely not Darwinism, so to speak, of mutations based on random mutations that just happen according to what the species chooses as their behavior, so to speak, but rather, instead of being a mutation, it becomes something which is necessary for its survival. It's more Lamarckism than it is Darwinism, but I guess in theory, if you wanted to make Darwin into something firm, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in charge of the mutations, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes sure that those mutations happen and the children are born that way. Whatever you want to say, however you want to put it, that's the concept from the Just the Rod. But don't go around telling everyone that I believe in evolution, because that's not happening. It's already your Facebook status. I'm sorry. Yeah. first of all, I'm sorry that you're faithful. Yeah, sexable. Yeah. Fine, but you're bringing it back to Noah or other.
What?
If you're bringing it back to Noah and other.
My point is that people look different because they all inbred.
Yeah. I never totally agreed. I'm not arguing on that point. I'm just saying, if you bring it all the way back, says the Radal, that's true. But if we're all coming from Adam and Noah originally, then shouldn't we all have the same look based on Noah? Granted, there's going to be differences. Everybody will agree there's going to be differences. But such drastic differences as there are in the world, it's huge. I'm sorry? I mean, there were a couple Neanderthals here before. But yeah, I do hear. I understand that completely, but it's still a major difference. I'm sorry? Mutation is a different look that wasn't there before. No. It would be the opposite. It would be the exact opposite. It would be that there are mutations, meaning there's a mutation. Okay, use mutation as the wrong word. Right. There are no. I can't believe it. I might scratch this all off today. I have to re-record this. But the fact is, yes, the mutation's not in the bad way of all of a sudden there's a monkey man that's coming out, and all of a sudden there's a, I don't know, there's a guy who has no eyes and shoots laser beams out or anything like that. I'm trying to think of my X-Men characters from way back when, right? But either way, nothing like that. A mutation is in something that is beneficial to that species' behavior that allows it to act well around its surrounding environment. That because of that, it mates with other mates, and it allows its DNA to go into the next generation rather than the previous ones, because this mutation was beneficial to the species' survival. That's the idea behind it. I can't go any deeper than that. Survival of the fittest. No, it wouldn't be random mutation. As long as that random mutation, that Kutcherspark was in charge the entire time, then in theory, such a theory can exist. And at least we have something. Whether or not it's actually that, no, I'm more into Lamarckism than I am into Darwinism. I'm more into that. That rejection's from Moth. It's fine. I can do my own Moth test. That would be fine. Okay? Yeah, but those are unbeneficial. I mean, we're seeing mutations that are not beneficial, like, you know, an extra finger or, you know, a two-headed snake or something like that. Those are not beneficial. I mean, beneficial mutations, which changed it a little bit. Again, all these things are in the realm of the supernatural, because even that, for a snake to all of a sudden become, you know, a reptile with legs is a huge, huge jump. How could that possibly happen? Which is impossible in the world that we have to, you know, that we see in the world that Earth is as big of a fantasy as anything else would be. I mean, it's a crazy fantasy. But again, if we're dealing with a Kutcher's Barrow, and a Kutcher's Barrow who wants these species to survive in that way, then in theory, this is the way it can work. Let's end with this, guys. I have a concept like this. Parak Tes Pasuk Beis says, Vayivarach Elokim et Noach, here we go. Vayivarach Elokim et Noach, Vayivanav, God blessed Noach and his sons, Vayomer Lahem, and he said to them, Hu Revu Milos Aretz, fruitful, multiply, fill up the land. Then it says, Morachem Bechitchem Yau Kol Chayes Aretz, I want your fear and your trepidation to be upon all the wild animals of the ground, Yau Kol Ofeshayim, and all the birds of the heavens, before Shertim Mosah Adam, before the Yayam, Beyedchem, they are in your hands to do with them as you will. That's what it says. Now, Morachem Bechitchem, Rashi says, Chitchem comes from the Lashon of Chitz. And he says that as long as a child is alive, then the animals are afraid of it. If a child is dead, even if he's 100 years old, if he's Og Melech HaBashan and he dies, then the animals are no longer afraid of him, and you need the shmirah from mice and from rats. That's what you need. But a live person automatically has a shmirah from mice and rats, and the mice and rats don't come up to him. Okay, so he says the following. Showing no fear, says the Medrash Rabba, I found this in the sacred Torah plain. And staring into the eyes of animals seems to work according to those who know how to do these things. But of course, there are attacks. If you look in the bottom of the Field Museum here in Chicago, Illinois, right, you can see that there is a crazy little lion that is stuffed right by the mummies. It's right by the lunchroom area, right by the steps that leads up in the northern steps that go up. If you check it out, that lion, says on the side, ate like 300 people, something like that, in India. It was like one of those lions. It's like a crazy little lion, and they have it stuffed and put inside there, and they're just, I don't know if it's like more of, sort of applauding it, or the fact that, that there was such a lion that existed, but it was responsible for attacks, okay? Obviously, there are animals that attack human beings and that kill human beings. We know that. However, it's clear that those are rare, isolated incidents. And it seems clear that we have some type of a mazel, as Rashi calls it in Bava Kama Days, says that we have a mazel that protects us and that allows us to be in some way protected from other animals. And this is what it means by Morach and Mechit Kam Yalkol Agayim, that your fear will be upon the name on the animals of the land, and all the animals of the land that we're not going to be affected by. The truth is, says the Strelitzker, is an unbelievable line, says the Imre Kodesh, that as long as we don't ruin our fundamental species, our image in God's way, our image that we look like God, if we don't ruin that, we have nothing to be afraid of when we meet up with different animals. But when we appear as animals to them, due to our many sins, when we go up and we start to appear as animals, that's when there are problems. That's when we have it. One time, the Strelitzker Rebbe was traveling in the forest with this Hasidim. Of course, he was in A. Very good. He's in his wagon, there were horses pulling the wagon. In the middle of the road, right, the horses stopped. And the driver couldn't understand what happened. He started whipping them, they wouldn't go. He looked toward the side and he saw a huge bear standing by the side of the road. Okay, so he screamed. Strelitzker Rebbe said, "What's the problem?" He said, "There's a bear on the side of the road. It looks like he's going to attack our horses. Just measure. The horses are whinnying, they're going up and down." Strelitzker said, "I'll take care of it." He came down off the wagon, walked up toward the bear, and lifted up his hat just a little bit to the point where his forehead was showing. The bear immediately looked up and turned away and ran straight into the forest. Strelitzker Rebbe came back to the wagon and he said to his chassidim, "I don't want you guys going around telling everyone that this is a mokas. Okay, I don't want you telling everybody. It's a straight out pasuk. It's a pasuk in the Torah. Uma'achem v'chitchem yalkol chayas aretz. The fear of you, if you have chiyus and you live like a human being should live, then your fear will be automatic on all of the animals that are there on the ground. Any of the animals that are around." Unbelievable little story. Shoah. I don't know if he meant for the story to be publicized. I'll tell you one other story, and this one story is an unbelievable story in and of itself. There's a guy by the name of Leon Elbaz. Leon Elbaz grew up from, but he ended up becoming a tamer, lion tamer, leopard tamer, whatever you want to call it. And he used to go around in a certain circus that went from town to town in some of the Mediterranean towns, some areas. I don't know if this is Morocco, Tunisia, somewhere around these areas. Okay, so right around this area, I couldn't recognize the name of the country they were from. I didn't understand it. But I guess the rug that we're about to mention is big, so we could probably look it up at the same time. Either way, he went around with these different boys. He used to train all of his animals, and he had a special leopard that he had raised from birth, and he whipped it. He made sure that it was in line, and it was a tremendous leopard with tremendous abilities. He could jump extremely high. He was very, very strong. But he had a whip on him, so the leopard was never able to attack him. So even though it had a big attitude, the leopard, because of everything, but it got what it needed, it got its food, and it was able to whatever. One time, one of the people who was locking up the cages was a little bit lazy, didn't lock up the cage of the leopard completely, and the leopard was able to get out. Ran away and started eating up some of the sheep that were in these flocks that were outside of a certain city. This shepherd that was in charge of the sheep, who usually lives such a calm life, was afraid. He saw a leopard in the middle of nowhere, in the middle of, you know, just eating up his sheep. And every other day, he was losing a sheep. Leopards don't eat that much, but they kill, and then they bring their carcasses all the way up to the trees, that when they're hungry, they'll eat from the carcass a little bit later. This leopard was doing just that. He ran into the town. The rub of the town, his name was Chaim Elbaz, or Chaim Elbaz, or Chacham, Chaim Elbaz. And he told him what the problem was. Chaim Elbaz said, "You don't have to worry, it'll be taken care of." Okay, so eventually this guy, Leon Elbaz, who was in charge, the brother of Rav Chaim Elbaz, he was the younger brother of Rav Chaim Elbaz, heard that the leopard was found, that they had something there, and he went there with all his whips. The problem was, the leopard climbed up a tree and wasn't willing to come down. Back in the days when there were no cranes outside, you had a leopard climb up a tree, you're not getting it back. That thing's not coming down. You just gotta wait it out. It's going to get hungry, so you're gonna have to wait it out. So they waited a couple days, but then they got sick and tired of waiting. The leopard had sufficient food in the tree that it didn't have to worry about doing anything. They left. Immediately the leopard came down, killed another sheep, went right back up the tree. So Leon is unbelievably upset. The shepherd called into Rav Chaim Elbaz and said, "Rebbe, I can't deal with this. I've already lost 4 sheep. I can't do this anymore. What am I going to do? I'm going to lose my whole life. 4 sheep is a huge amount of money for me." Chaim Elbaz said, "I'll take care of it." Chaim Elbaz went down there, the most crazy thing in the world, and he told the guy, guy. Take his staff. Chacham Elbaz's staff. He said, stay the leper. Chacham Elbaz commands you to come down and eat. So the guy took the staff, went up toward the tree, and said, Chacham Elbaz commands you to come meet him. The leper comes down off the tree and starts walking, stopping right next to this man. He goes straight to Chacham Elbaz, and the Chacham Elbaz looks into the leper's eyes and says, who said that you can take away Parnassa from a Yid? Who said you can take away Parnassa from any Jew? You're responsible for this, and the punishment for such is death. He pulls out a shechita knife, and the leopard turns itself around onto its back and stretches out its neck. In front of all the people that were there, Chacham Elbaz takes out the knife, sharpens it, and cuts off the leopard's head or whatever it is, checks it. They didn't need it for it's not kosher. One of the most posted leopards aren't kosher. Yeah, pretty much all. Yeah, I'm pretty, maybe. I haven't been through all this farm yet. But yeah, regardless, I'm pretty sure it doesn't have split hooves. Either way, and they checked it, and it made a huge impression. Leon Elbaz, Chacham Elbaz's younger brother, said, I always thought that my brother was a batman, that he never did anything, that I was the one who's going to do something, make something of his life. Making something your life, working in a circus, I'm not so sure if he really fulfilled that part of his life. Regardless, I always thought that I was going to be the person, but now I see the person who really made something out of himself was Chacham Elbaz. There is a Chacham Chaim Elbaz, I just don't remember where exactly he's from, but that's the line. The same idea of Morachem Lechitchem Yel Kol Chayasar. So in summary, we have no inability to give Musar because he was Musar about the wrong thing. Teaching Rishayim and being affected by it. We have what animals actually made it into the Deva itself. And then we have the difference between why animals are afraid of people. What makes them have that fear? I couldn't follow his promise was that fear will be on us for all time. Just stop with that, guys.